Good.
The recordings have been started.
Great. Good. Someone take a roll.
Shall I do a roll call for you?
That would be great.
Fine. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. We have on the call Zaid Jamil, Kathy Kleinman, Alan Greenberg, John Nevitt, Jeff Newman, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Mark Partridge, Konstantinos Komatis, Mike Rodenbach, Wendy Seltzer, and Paul McGrady. And for staff, we have Margie Milam, Amy Stathos, Liz Gaster, Marika Koenig, and myself, Glenda Sangeri. Have I missed off anybody?
Well,
thanks,
thank you,
John.
Thanks, Glenn. Okay, so today we're talking about the Trademark Clearinghouse. I just read the transcript of last week's, and it looked like we ended a little early last week, so hopefully we could finish the clearinghouse issues, and then we could finish that one last topic on the URS that we left off yesterday that there's been some email traffic on lately with so Jeff and Mike and Alan on the transfer of the holding period. So let's launch into the Trademark Clearinghouse, unless there's any housekeeping items. Margie, your hand's raised.
Yeah, I have a suggestion, especially if we are able to have extra time. I took a look at the board letter to the GNSO, and I know we've been spending a bit of our time on an alternative proposal, but the board does ask specific questions related to the Trademark Clearinghouse, and I put them up in a document, the question, so we can maybe look at it at the end of this call if we have time, and just to get a sense for whether we want to make sure that we've addressed all those issues or, ask the group how we want to respond with respect to that part of the letter, because it seems like we've been focused on the alternative proposal but haven't really looked at the rest of the letter, and I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Okay, so the letter said, keep in mind in discussing a consensus position the following questions, right?
Yeah, there's like a series of eight of them, and I have them.
Excuse me. Robin Groves now joins.
Okay, thank you.
Address them.
Sorry, go ahead, Margie.
Oh, I have them posted. We can look at it at the end of the session and to see whether, we want to discuss how we want to approach them.
Great, that makes sense. Paul?
Yeah, just a housekeeping note. I just circulated the draft, the proposed draft notice for the IP claim service. And for those of you who may not have checked your email, it should be there by now. And that's from Kathy and me. And I know you're not supposed to say this on ICANN calls, but we really had a good time working on this, and so we hope you guys like it.
We did have a good time.
Well, thank you, Paul. Alan?
Another housekeeping one. I noticed the meetings that were scheduled there being scheduled for next week are all 1 hour, and I just wanted to make sure that was intentional and not accidental, because I'm in the process of trying to schedule other meetings around them.
Okay, and then Margie had a response that I just saw pop up.
Yeah, I think that was unintentional. We've been doing an hour and a half, and I would suggest we reserve an hour and a half. If we finish early, that's great, but that might alleviate having 4 calls next week if we get a lot done.
Okay, that's what I suspected. Thank you.
Okay. Is that acceptable to everyone? We're talking about 6 hours of calls next week, then.
I'm unlikely to be able to make most of them, Mrs. Lindy.
Okay, for people who aren't on this call, those notices should be revised, I guess, and resent out.
Okay, I'll make sure Glenn does that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Alan. All right, so unless there's any other housekeeping matters, we'll launch right into the clearinghouse issues. We'll just go through the document that Margie circulated yesterday. The first one is the name that had consensus, the function of clearinghouse, separate functions that seem to have consensus, a requirement that they use a regional validation service had consensus. One database for the registry to connect with had consensus, and one submission point had consensus. Relationship with ICANN had consensus.
By the way, it's Alan. I had said I would send out what the principles are to this, but on rereading what Margie had, they're all stated pretty clearly, so I didn't.
Great. Okay, so moving on to number four. Marks eligible for inclusion. Nationally registered marks and no common law rights and no court validated marks. Seems to have consensus on nationally registered marks, but no consensus on excluding common law rights. So is that was there a working group or some folks talking about that issue on the side? Alan?
Two issues on that. First of all, at one point we talked about what I think are Benelux trademarks, although there was also a reference to European Union ones, which are not validated. And the question is, are we including these or not? Because I know some words in other documents, and I think within the UDRP, talk about validated trademarks. And we need to be specific if we are restricting some trademarks and not others. I don't think we came to closure. I think someone went off to do some checking, and we never got back to it. But I'm just raising the issue again so we don't forget it.
Is someone with a hand raised can answer that question?
Yeah, I can, I think.
Okay.
Mike Rodenbaugh. I think, Alan, you're talking about examination. Some trademark offices, national trademark offices, don't...
Yes, you're correct.
...give a substantive examination of the applications. But I think, hopefully, we've come to consensus that you can't kind of pick and choose among different countries and decide that their regime is better than another regime. Pretty much have to accept any registrations of national effect at minimum. As respect to common law marks, you know, I'll just quickly make the point again. I think that it's much bigger benefit to the NCUC and everybody else if common law rights are included. I would say, you know, maybe they need not be mandatorily included, but at least have to be optionally allowed to be included by both the clearinghouse up front, so trademark owners can put in their common law rights, and then also by registries and registrars who want to acknowledge common law trademark rights.
Okay, I've got a cue going now. Alan, were you done? I'm sorry.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
But Mike went into the other one. At large is somewhat divided. There are some people who live in common law areas that want them included. Other people, you know, are just as happy without. I guess I would agree with what Mike just said, that as a minimum we're talking about nationally registered marks. I think the clearinghouse needs to have the ability to register other types of marks with the assumption that the fees are set accordingly and they have geographic bounds to them, and then registries can decide to use them or not at the registry's decision. And I think that makes more sense. It also may make a more viable business model for the clearinghouse so it doesn't go out of business 3 months later. But I don't think that part is not our direct problem.
Okay. Mike, were you done?
Almost. Just one more very quick point is, you know, we could another option we could choose is to say that registries and registrars should acknowledge common law rights just as much as registered rights of national effect as a best practice and recommend it that way.
Okay. I assume Jeff will have a comment on that, but looks like Mark is next.
I was just going to make the point that with respect to this, I guess it's what Mike already said, we shouldn't be in the business of deciding which countries marks are second-class citizens, so they should be marks of national effect. We don't want ICANN or registrars or registries making that judgment. And we have factored into this a challenge procedure, so that marks that do not actually have the scope of rights claimed can be challenged. Plus, the notice that Kathy and Paul have put together, I think, really helps with the concerns that might flow from this. So I support the position that Alan put forward and Mike put forward.
Okay, Jeff?
You know, I was going to support what Mike had, everything that Mike said until that last statement. I do agree with the fact that if the clearinghouse should be able to take in these things, I do agree with the point that it should be a registry's choice as to whether to have them included in any kind of Sunrise or IP claims process. And I also think that I disagree with Mike, obviously, that it should be a best practice that registries honor those rights. I think to do so would give countries that have that actually recognize common law rights, giving those businesses an advantage over every other place in the world. So I think that's wrong. I don't think that should happen. And to say something is a best practice, if a registry doesn't do it, you're basically saying that the registry is not in conformance with best practice, and no one wants to do that. So I think we give no value judgments on whether a registry should recognize those rights. You leave that up to the registry, and you have all costs being paid by the common law trademark owner and none by the registry to have those in the clearinghouse. And I think we have something that may be acceptable.
Okay, so your position is nationally registered marks, regardless of geographic bounds, would be in the clearinghouse, and common law rights and court validated rights may be included in the clearinghouse.
Well, I think the clearinghouse can take in whatever it wants, and registries should have the right whether to use them in a Sunrise process or IP claims process or not.
Okay.
But I wouldn't label anything best practice.
Okay. Any concerns with that? Mike?
This is Paul. Would we
absolutely
give out
a... Let me just clarify, Jeff. I didn't say that I was in favor of naming it a best practice. I'm actually in favor of it being mandatory that the clearinghouse must accept common law rights and that registries must acknowledge them equally with registered rights. But assuming that we don't get consensus on that, I think the next best thing would be to name it a best practice.
Okay. Any other comments on that?
I have a question. It's Alan. I have a question for Mike. Does that mean you would essentially? It's a bit of minority opinion if we don't, or you're just saying what you would like to see.
If we don't accept common law rights or make them mandatory, yes, I expect that I'll write a short statement on that. I think
okay. That
would be foolish.
Okay. Paul.
And I just, what we're talking about on this is not, when we say that a registry can decide whether or not to consider which, you know, what rights, we're not backing off on the position that the registry has to include. It's mandatory that the national rights would be considered. The option is whether or not the registry would include common law or other court-mandated rights. Is that correct?
I think that's what we said.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff. Oh, I'm sorry, Kathy and then Jeff.
Okay. I apologize. Due to some street noise, I've had to move away from the computer, so I'll just probably be verbally raising my hand for a while. let me just run down the list. Because I feel like we're coming back to a discussion that we've had many times, and maybe Mike missed some of it, but I thought we've done it at great length. First, in terms of jurisdiction, this is a verification process, and we had talked about using nationally registered marks from jurisdictions that go through the process of verifying. You know, 12 years ago, we had the race to Tunisia to get nationally registered marks that could be used in network solutions to trump, domain name registrants. Here, too, this idea, and it came from the IRT report on what could be used in the URF. We've been talking this whole time about nationally registered marks from jurisdictions that actually go out and look to see if they're really rights. That's what we're supposed to be incorporating into the trademark clearinghouse, is someone who's done some work to look at the mark and see if it really is valid for these goods and services and if there really is anything else in the field or in the area. So I'd like to go back to that because that was implicit to me, and as I read through the charts, that was my understanding. In terms of the trademark clearinghouse and what types of marks it incorporates into the trademark clearinghouse, the one run by ICANN and mandated by ICANN, and mandated and used in the mandatory Sunrise and IP claims. Again, we had talked about only nationally registered marks. We had gone through many discussions, and you've heard me, I'll do it again if you want, the song and dance about not sending bottles and labels and, you know, homegrown pieces of business cards and stationery to something run by ICANN. We had offered as an alternative court verification of common law marks. Because as we understand the law, no one can actually say the extent and the validity of a common law mark until it goes to court and it's verified by a court. So we'll again submit nationally registered marks and common law marks from courts. And I think it's much easier to read a court decision that validates and verifies a common law mark than to look at a label and try to decide that it has some global rights in the Trademark Clearinghouse. So let me put back in the court-validated common law marks. And I think Paul got to this, and then the idea that the registries can do whatever they want when it comes to looking at common law marks or pizza shops or left-handers or the names of artworks or the names of children, that this is whatever the registry wants to reserve beyond the Trademark Clearinghouse is fine. You know, because they're going to be in the position of wanting to open up the space and wanting to reserve it, but that it doesn't belong in the Trademark Clearinghouse, capital T, capital C. Thanks.
Mr. Newmar?
Is that what I put in there?
Yeah.
Oops.
No, it's Newman on my screen.
No, mine says Newmar.
let me agree with the first part of Kathy in the sense that the IRT recommended it's jurisdictions that have substantive evaluation. I don't want to see demand media, no offense, Jeff Eckhouse. I don't want to see demand media get blog as a second level in every single TLD simply because they registered blog in the Benelux countries. So I strongly support what Kathy said initially, and I don't care if it raises trouble with the GAC or anybody else, frankly. That's for other people to worry about. I don't think it's for this group to worry about. So I think we should stick with the IRT recommendation of substantive national accepting all or have to accept all registrations nationally registered in countries that do a substantive evaluation. And on the second point, I disagree with Kathy that I don't care that it has common law rights have to be limited to courts validated. I think it can be accepted as long as the registry can use it how it sees fit. So that's my comments. Thanks.
Okay, Alan?
On both of those issues, on the issue of substantive evaluation, that is, countries that do a substantive evaluation, I don't think we want to be in the business of deciding is it substantive enough. But the binary decision of they do none versus they do some, I think is something that we could do should the group decide. So again, we don't want to decide how good a job they do. But if they clearly and openly say we don't do any, then I think that's a binary decision we could make. In the case of common law marks, I don't really care if the clearinghouse wants to evaluate bottles and business cards. The fee they're going to have to set is going to be outrageously high. I don't think many people will use it. I think that's true for court-validated judgments as well. You can't just read the one judgment. You've got to make sure it wasn't appealed, it wasn't reversed. It's a complex, expensive process. And the issue of how do you prove that you really have used the name, if we go back to one of the things that I think Mike mentioned on a previous meeting of celebrities, and to use the example that we started the meeting with, if O.J. Simpson is going to be registered, it's something that you know, one doesn't have to validate, does he exist, and has he used the name for a long time? These are easy things to evaluate. As Olivier said in a conversation previous to this, if the person who's registering it is Michael Smith, well, it turns out there's a lot of famous Michael Smiths, and we may have a problem.
Except that the first one's going to block all the rest of them.
Perhaps.
Well, no, it's not a block. It only gives notice.
Yeah.
Sunrise. This is going to be used for Sunrise, too, guys.
All I'm saying is we're stuck with a lot of words that mean a lot of things and a lot of overlapping trademarks in the world. We don't have a neat world. And if the clearinghouse wants to do this and thinks it can do it reasonably and there'll be a customer base to want to use it, I don't see a reason to block it.
Mike?
Sorry, my hand's not...
Okay, Kathy?
I didn't put my hand down either.
Okay. Jeff?
Hold on one sec. I have a kid on my lap here. The only point I was going to make with Sunrise, to make it clear that not all marks have to be accepted by the registry. In other words, if a registry wants to limit the registry to shoes during a Sunrise period, it doesn't have to accept Microsoft for software. So somehow where we come out with wording that doesn't preclude a registry from limiting it to a certain class of goods and services. That was the only other comment.
Okay, Constantine.
Yes, I would like to, I've heard that we have been talking about second-class citizens if we don't accept common law marks, but I think that if we accept common law marks, we give an unfair advantage to the jurisdictions that actually understand common law marks. I live in the UK, which understands it, but I am part of the European Union, which does not really understand common law marks, and most of the jurisdictions around the world do not really see what common marks are or how they're validated and go back to the traditional register, national register trademarks. I think that it is very important that we do not allow common law marks to enter it, first of all, because I do not see how the clearinghouse is going to cope with the so many identical common law marks that are going that will seek entry into the clearinghouse. And to this effect, and because there are some common law marks out there that have been challenged and we need to protect them, but we need to protect them because they have already been challenged before court. And it's not a long process to read a court decision. Court decisions of that sort do not even normally go to appeal. It's either you have a common law mark or you don't have a common law mark, and then basically infringement is justified. So I would understand incorporating court-validated common law marks, but opening the clearinghouse to all common law marks is like opening Pandora's box, and I really cannot see how the clearinghouse is going to cope with so many common law marks entering that are identical and confusingly similar and all the rest.
Okay. Wendy?
Two quick points. That I understand that the clearinghouse is supposed to be used in sort of a notice function. That's what registration serves in many instances, but common law does not. So limiting to registered marks fits with the assumptions of trademark law better. And ultimately, we need a bright line. We need a place where we can simply draw the line and say, if you've met these criteria, you have the opportunity to register here, and possession of a registration serves that, whereas if we accept common law marks, we get into the murky definition of once again trying to survey all sorts of legal systems to figure out what they might recognize, whereas the singular hurdle of do you have a registration or not, even though the criteria may differ in different jurisdictions, is at least easier to verify.
Kathy?
Another criterion, I didn't raise it initially, but as I was thinking it over, we have a mandate not to expand trademark rights, and I believe that's one of the questions the board asked us about. And here, if the Trademark Clearinghouse is accepting bottles and labels and business cards, then how do you tell it that it can't accept those from jurisdictions that don't have common law rights? So are you going to tell them they can only accept it from the UK and the US, but not from France, or does the French guy get to send his bottle over too, in which case you've given him a common law right that didn't exist? There's an overexpansion issue. The other thing I wanted to note is, as an attorney who counseled many, many small businesses, particularly in the internet service provider area for many years, in the U.S., I told them never to rely on their common law rights. We went ahead and got federal registrations. And once you're on the internet, in the U.S., you have that right. You're engaged in interstate commerce. You qualify. You meet the criteria for applying for a federal mark, and almost everyone I know does now. So it's not an either-or. In the U.S., you can have your common law rights, but you have your federal registration as well. So I'm very concerned about the overexpansion. That's outside our mandate and our scope. So back to nationally registered marks, and again, court-validated common law marks. It's clear, it's distinguishable, and it's within the scope of existing law and easy verification.
Okay, so we just heard from three NCSG folks, just trying to understand, you know, your coordinated position, that you want the clearinghouse to include nationally registered marks of, regardless of jurisdiction. You want court-validated marks, but you don't want common law marks? Is that it?
We thought this was a done deal. We thought that this had already been set a long time ago.
Okay, but is that it? Am I correct in...
Yes.
Okay. So, and when you don't want common law rights, does that mean you want a specific prohibition against common law rights in the clearinghouse, or you're okay with them being in there, but just that they're not mandatory or anything, any kind of use?
They don't belong in the ICANN trademark clearinghouse. If a registry wants to use them separately, just as they want to use anything, whether it's a common law right or not. But this idea of a verified data, central database, and again, this we opened with this a long time ago, and I thought we had consensus on this, that this is a database that's going forward and will have and will be used. We're mandating it so that we're mandating it for use in Sunrise and IP claims. And all new GTLDs in some way, shape, or form, so that whatever's in it has to be definable, verifiable, and within the scope of trademark law.
So you're okay with
a trademark clearinghouse.
Let me just understand. You're okay with the same provider having a separate, you know, a wall between the two, but collecting that information, and a registry could choose to use it on, you know, whatever commercial terms the registry and this provider works out, right?
Whatever's being used for the 500 new GTLDs, right, should be, it is what we're creating here. Right, exactly. Registries can do further things, of course.
Okay.
I'm agreeing with you.
Mike?
Okay. I mean, I just want to make sure that companies, famous brands like eBay, Yahoo, whatever, that have lots of common law trademark rights get some protection out of this scheme. And I don't think it's at all an expansion of trademark law anywhere in the world to acknowledge that while eBay may be registered in 300 countries, they probably haven't registered eBay Motors or eBay Auctions or eBay France or, you know, any number of the hundreds of different eBay / descriptive / country name properties that they own, which are, in fact, each a common law trademark right. So this situation was addressed in the EU launch in a very difficult way. Basically required Yahoo at the time where I was working. We had to get an affidavit of a local common law lawyer in England to swear that we had common law rights under English law, and therefore we were able to register a bunch of those names in the Sunrise. I think a similar situation could could work for the clearinghouse, although I certainly don't want to require that that there be a legal opinion for each one. But something like that ought to work. Perhaps a sworn statement of in-house counsel even would work, that, you know, they do have common law trademark protection in these terms because they've used it in this way for this many years, et cetera, et cetera. Again, I don't think that that is an expansion of existing trademark law in any.
Okay, Kathy?
It sounds like Mike's just proposed something which is useful. I'd really like to understand it better, but provided it's not something going into this trademark clearinghouse as a federally registered mark, and it's not, I see your concerns, Mike, and maybe the registries can respond how it would be possible to use some expansion of the trademark clearinghouse for these very, very well-known brands.
Jeff?
Sorry, what do I have to explain?
I have a 2.5-year-old on my lap here.
Well, we want to talk to the 2.5-year-old.
All right, Rachel. What do you have?
Probably a lot more reasonable.
Rachel, you have anything to say to everybody? Is this being recorded? Anything? No. Nope. All right, what's the question?
What you thought of what Mike said.
Of
registries, of working directly with of trademark owners of very, very well-known brands who have an extension. Mike, you should probably rephrase it rather than me.
Well, yeah, but I think it dovetails back with, you know, what exact strings would trigger a match in the clearinghouse also, right? It's that issue again. So, Jeff, it's basically to make sure that there is a notice triggered and there is an opportunity for eBay, for example, to register in Sunrise, names like eBay Motors, eBay Auctions, eBay France, et cetera, which they don't have registered rights in, but are clearly common law trademarks.
Yeah, I mean, some of the registries may choose to do that. They'll have to work directly with the clearinghouse to do that. And I'm sure that, you know, the clearinghouse could have a function where it accepts keywords. I mean, that's something it could do. I mean, I know of a couple of registries that talked about doing things like that. So it is feasible, but I wouldn't make it mandatory.
Okay, I mean, fair enough. Yura did it, for sure, and that's what I was discussing a few minutes ago. But
all right, and I'm assuming the registry would have to bear some of the cost of that as well to, you know, to pass it on to end users. But I'm sure that they would do that. Some of them would. Now, the claim process is a little different because, well, maybe not. I mean, in the end, it's the clearinghouse that's doing the matching. Sorry, I'm just trying to go through this in my head as this would be implemented.
We seem to be coming closer together, but I want to try to get clarity on one thing. If we say that the registry should be able to do this on their own, whether it's, you know, our classic pizza restaurants or Yahoo-X, why would we want to preclude them contracting with the clearinghouse to do this and allow the clearinghouse to be the database that is used for the process and not have to set up other one-on-one relationships? It's not a requirement of ICANN, but why would we preclude the clearinghouse from being in that side business, as it were?
I don't think anyone says we should, unless I'm...
Well, no,
I've
heard words saying that the clearinghouse must not, the registries can do it through some other mechanism. I'm just suggesting, I'm asking the question of why couldn't the clearinghouse be doing this as a side business, since they already have the infrastructure and the communications lines to do this. It sounds like a viable win-win situation.
All right, Kathy, do you want to address that?
Yeah, sorry for jumping the queue on this. Alan, I think there's a difference between the clearinghouse as the process, as the database, and the clearinghouse as a business. So if PricewaterhouseCoopers comes in on this, they're going to have many, many, many other businesses. One will be managing the trademark clearinghouse. Let's call it the piece that I'm talking about is the database that communicates with the registries. But if they want to manage other databases or have other businesses, of course, they're going to have thousands and thousands of other businesses. So we've talked about it in many meetings. You know, let's put a stipulation in that the company that runs the clearinghouse not be barred from providing other services, because they would be a very logical place to do that, to provide other services to the registries. Does that answer the question, Al?
I'm not 100% sure. I think you're saying it.
The clearinghouse is one of many businesses that this kind of international entity will be offering.
Well, yes, but let's assume it's not an international entity. It's someone who sets up a business to be the clearinghouse. Is there any reason they couldn't, and I'll use my wording, as a side business, also offer services to registries, saying that, you know, we also have this sub-database of common law marks you may choose to use or not?
One would expect they might.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Right, so there'd be no objection to that, it sounds like. No, this is no bar to the clearinghouse provider providing similar services to registries, registrars, or trademark holders related to common law rights.
Just like they presumably could do post-launch stuff if everyone agrees
sure.
that it's a good thing.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Any, I still have a lot of hands up. Mark?
I do have a, I would hope that it would be acceptable around the table on that idea that there be a single place to do that. That is, that if more than one registry decides that a certain kind of information is useful to it, that we don't have to have multiple different places for recording that information. To be more specific, let's say there are new registries that limit their applicants to members of the Professional Golf Association, that it be recorded once and that a new registry could use the same database and the people wouldn't have to refile.
If the clearinghouse are good business people, they will offer such a service.
Like I say, I'm hoping that's a concept that's agreeable around the table, that we wouldn't need to reinvent it each time.
I mean, there would be there's a marketplace solution for that. Why would a registry want to pay someone else to do it and recreate it?
Yeah.
And why wouldn't this provider want to provide that kind of service? So.
So that sounds like that we have agreement on that idea.
Okay, so it sounds like we're pretty close on that one. The next issue is identical match.
Hey, John, can I ask clarity? I don't understand what the consensus is. Is the consensus that registered marks from countries that have substantive examination are in the database and that's it? I don't really have a good idea as to what you think the consensus is.
I guess my understanding was nationally registered marks, regardless of jurisdiction, are in the database. And then there's I didn't hear any objection to court-validated marks. We didn't really dive into that too deeply.
Assuming they come along with geographic limitations and appropriate fees.
Right.
Court-validated common law marks?
Right. You've been arguing in favor of court-validated marks, right?
Right, exactly. I just wanted to add the common law, right.
So would you lump them, from an NCSG perspective, lump them in with the nationally registered marks or lump them in with the other common law rights, common law marks?
NCSG had proposed that court-validated common law marks be included in the main trademark clearinghouse database. There had been objection to that, but it came from others. So I'll go back to that original proposal.
Okay, so based on what we have in the document, I'll get to you in a sec, Jeff. What we have in the document, it sounds like nationally registered marks would be included. Common law rights, whether they're court validated or not, would not be included in the ICANN clearinghouse, but there'll be no bar to provide these services for the same provider to provide these services for common law rights and court validated common law rights. To registries and registrars and trademark holders
through a different database.
Yeah, John, I thought it was that it would be court validated common law rights.
Would be what you thought
would be included in the main database along with marks of.
Okay. Is there any objection to having court validated common law rights in the main database?
Yeah, I think that's where I raised my hand. I only object because I've never seen a court validate a common law right except in a specific case or controversy in which it comes up. And courts don't generally grant trademark rights. Courts look at a specific context in the case before it. Courts don't do overwhelming, overarching issues.
Well, I don't know
what that looks like. If someone could please send me around something that we could see what a court-validated trademark right looks like.
Well, it would be a decision where a common law right is asserted, and the court has to say, yes, there is a common law right.
But it still comes up with it in a particular case or
controversy.
Yeah,
but first they have to establish that there's a right, and then the second issue is that there's an infringement. So the
court validation would first of all be a decision that says there is a right.
But does that mean that another court has to abide by that decision? No. I mean, another court could actually review that de novo in a different case or controversy.
So I'm not sure that,
in theory.
Wendy?
I'm not sure that this is a significantly different problem from the rest of trademark law, where registered marks are only preclusive in a particular class of goods and services in a particular geography. So the registration doesn't mean unbounded rights. A court judgment doesn't mean unbounded rights. It's just a piece of paper from an authority that gives a little bit more than your say-so that you have a claim to something around a particular mark. I think that's probably the best we can do.
Right. So instead of a trademark holder giving a piece of paper that says, here's my registration with the National Trademark Office, they're giving the court case. Okay. Okay, so it sounds like other than just question, there isn't really objection to adding court-validated common law rights into the clearinghouse, and then there would be no bar for the same clearinghouse provider if it wishes to provide similar services to registries, registrars, and trademark holders on other common law rights or any other issue.
Right. Perhaps we can say beyond trademark owners, organizations, groups. Sorry, this is Kathy. Registries may want all sorts of data as they open up
sure.
new GTLDs.
I mean, geographic registries are the best example. I mean, they may mm-hmm. want every kind of, you know, if I'm running dot Paris, I might want every mark in France. I might want common law rights in France or in Paris, that kind of thing.
Wait, common law rights in Paris?
In names related to that city. Mm-hmm. Okay, identical match. I'm sorry, Alan.
Yeah, okay. At the very end, Kathy, when we were talking about common law marks and other things, Kathy added the words in a separate database, and I would see no reason to control how the clearinghouse provider organizes its computer systems.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Can I respond?
Sure.
It has to be a separate database. This is a trademark clearinghouse. We're setting up a database pursuant to ICANN rules. This is an ICANN process. The rules of how this will be managed are going, when they change, will be subject to comment and an open procedure and a GNSO procedure. So I think it has to be, as an old large-scale database programmer, it's not a big deal. I think it has to be a separate database. Because we're creating the rules for one database, and this is going to be a set of rules that are created for other databases.
Database technology evolves over the years, whether it's one database with a flag to subset it into two things, or in fact is two databases, you know.
Sorry, guys, I'm going to say one database. Banks have different databases. This is, we don't want flags. It's a different database.
But how about separate databases, one portal?
Separate logical databases I can accept. I cannot accept that we're specifying technology. The technology has changed far too much in the last 5 years alone in how databases are or physically organized and constructed.
But then you're creating a monopoly
cloud
provider.
Cloud computing and things like that change the whole thing.
There may be competitors. There may be other, you know, Pricewaterhouse
and
Arthur Anderson.
Let them compete.
It's a separate database. It may be in the same cloud. It's a separate database, and you want it to be the interface may become, you can make it freeware, you can make it open source software, but other companies are going to want to be competing to provide information as well. So they should have access to the same interface. But this is the trademark clearinghouse, capital T, capital C, that ICANN is stipulating, and that's different. That's different than anything else that this company or other companies may create.
Margie has in a separate database. We had some statements made. I'm not sure we had closure and consensus on that. Is anyone still here?
Nope.
I'm here.
Hello?
I'm here.
I think that's a level of detail that we discussed we shouldn't put in here. So if, to the extent that it says that in the notes, I think the consensus, if anything, was the opposite. Okay, so...
Kathy does raise an issue of we can't do something which is going to be anti-competitive, and this may be an implementation issue which lawyers have to get involved in, not trademark lawyers.
This will not be an exclusive product for this service provider.
Okay.
Anyone else can provide that.
But I don't think we should be specifying into that level of detail. And there are business issues and legal issues which I can will have to think about.
Right. Okay. So the next topic is we talked about identical matches, right? Plurals and marks, and then we're on this long one for number 5. Unless there are comments on the rest of number 4.
Yeah, the stuff in red. Which says database to be structured to allow registry expanded to include marks contained. I think that's what we've been discussing, but I believe we are not limiting it to marks contained anymore. So I think the red at the end of 4 no longer applies, but is replaced by what we've been discussing for the last half hour.
Okay, number 5.
So let me clarify that. So we're saying there is consensus on including marks contained or excluding marks contained?
I think what we've just been discussing is not limited to marks contained. I think I assume marks contained means Yahoo Sports.
Right.
Okay.
That's what I meant by that word.
Okay, We're saying that there may be a non-clearinghouse database function which will include those class of marks which are not explicitly registered in total and are not common law marks. That's not our business. We're not precluding the vendor from doing that or someone
right.
else from doing that.
Right, but are we requiring protection from marks contained? I think that's what that meant. So we're not precluding it as a voluntary thing, but are we, requiring it?
I don't think we've ever in this discussion included marks contained as something which is mandatory. The IRT didn't, and I don't think we ever did. I don't think.
Okay, I've got Mark and Kathy.
I don't know where this might lead, but I think it's worth considering marks contained because we do find that many of the problems involve something like a registered mark such as Yahoo, where people just add additional terms to it and then use that for pay-per-click or phishing sites.
Yeah. But isn't that one of the optional services that we've already decided someone could offer?
I think the optional service was that Yahoo might try to think of all the different permutations and then claim a common law right in that as a separate service. But if the database technology is capable of giving somebody a notice, for example, Yahoo is in the database and somebody tries to register Yahoo Sports, they simply get a notice saying Yahoo is... in the database, it's registered for this. Are you sure that you have a good faith basis for using this? And they say yes and proceed. I think that's a valuable service all around the table to reduce disputes and reduce problems down the road and costs to all of the parties.
Okay. Who's next?
Jeff Foss, the Adobe for a minute.
Mr.
Zahid. Hi. I'm trying to hark back to a discussion we had with the GPMO group who worked on this stuff, and I remember the discussion was it consists of meant that if the trade if the trademark was inside a name which was even broader, but the name was identically there, then it would be covered. So Yahoo Sports or Yahoo with words on the left or words on the right would go in, and that, that was the understanding I had when we were in the IRT. So, and I see the same language used with the staff report, and I'm confused by this discussion of whether Yahoo Sports get in, is an identical match or not.
Jeff, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, that is precisely not what the IRT came out with in the final report. In fact, in the draft report, it was debated as to what that was accidentally some language we used. In the final report, we clarified that contains is not something that we wanted mandatory. Because remember, can you think of all the marks that contain the word sun or the word apple? You know, these are or Windows. I mean, forget it. The contains, we the IRT and all the IP attorneys on the IRT came to a consensus that was not something that should be mandatory because it was just too difficult and there were too many errors that would come out and the chilling effect, even in a claims process. I mean, the Sunrise process would obviously be a mistake, but even in the claims process, the chilling effect would be too great and would be more than the benefits.
Hey, Wendy?
Yeah, it's been said, I think.
Okay. Kathy?
Of course, agreeing with Jeff because I feel like we're kind of circling back to the same discussions, but Enum and Venom, it works, what Mark is saying works well for coined and fanciful marks. It doesn't work. I had the same examples written down that Jeff used for Apple. You know, if you have Apple Sports, why should you get an IP notice from Apple Computer? If you have Time for a watch, why should you get a notice from Time Warner? Panther for clothing. Once it goes into dictionary words, the marks contain doesn't work. And I know we worked long and hard in trying to draft what you see here, and it's far beyond. I mean, what you see here in the material that's posted, and it's far beyond what NCSG initially wanted, but it seemed to be kind of a fair compromise.
Okay. Mike and then Jeff Eckhouse.
Sure. I think that, you know, the Enum and Venom situation can be easily dealt with by allowing functionality to exclude certain phrases and perhaps even put an obligation on the trademark owners to exclude known marks that they're aware of that are fair uses. So, for example, in the Yahoo case, there might be a Yahoo Slippers that we knew about before Yahoo ever existed, and we would simply be obligated to exclude that from the list when we input Yahoo into the clearinghouse. Seems to me that's a very simple technical fix to this problem. It still doesn't eviscerate the remedy, not only for famous brand owners, but for the entire universe of registrants who will be benefited by getting this sort of notice.
Okay. Jeff, I guess, let me know.
Yeah, so I just wanted to comment about the part about, I think it was Mark that had stated that if it's, you know, if something comes up like a Yahoo or something, that the person would get the letter saying it may infringe. I don't think it's an issue that most of the registrants that are doing this are saying, oh, gee, I've never heard of Yahoo before or Microsoft when I'm doing this. Thank God I got this note. I think people are aware of that in advance, and I'm not sure, I don't know if it'll have a huge effect by having that notification. I think it will have, I hate to use the term, the chilling effect on people who are saying, you know, if they want to do like apple picking and they get a notice that say it may infringe on Apple and they're like, oh man, they don't know about this. But I have a feeling the people that do, you know, something Microsoft or something Yahoo, I think they are aware of what's going on, and they're bad actors, and I don't think this note is going to make much of a difference for them.
Hey, Alan?
Yeah, two things. First of all, I'll remind people we're talking about only pre-launch at this point. So it's not the regular random registrant who's coming in to register something. And second of all, we spent a half an hour deciding that a clearinghouse, whether it's the clearinghouse or not, could offer such a service. And if the registry chooses to opt in and accept whatever chilling effect goes along with it, they can. This is beyond what the IRT recommended. It's beyond the staff proposal. I understand why some people would like to see it, but it's just going too far, and I think it's getting us into a quagmire we're not going to get out of.
I tend to agree with that. Mark?
I guess going back to the IRT report as a way to balance this issue, the IRT report acknowledged this concern and in the end said that that a narrower interpretation of match could be workable in conjunction with an effective URF, and perhaps that's the approach for us to continue to take here.
I support that.
Thanks, Mark. Okay. Anything else on this one?
John, so do I have it correct that marks contained is excluded as a mandatory requirement that can be a voluntary inclusion as optional service? Is that right?
Yeah, any concerns with
I don't think there's consensus on that. That's maybe as close as we're going to get.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, Mike. Okay.
I guess this is Kathy. If we could write down, marks contained is still. I think we agree with what goes into the trademark clearinghouse.
Do we? I mean, so people can put in marks contained strings into the clearinghouse, and it's up to the registry whether to acknowledge them or not.
No.
This is not an ICANN mandated service that the clearinghouse is providing. A clearinghouse may provide such a service.
That is just ridiculous. To assume that there's going to be multiple clearinghouses. I thought we were making this clearinghouse mandatory for all registries. Correct?
I think that's the number five, the next topic, right? any comments on number five?
Are we precluding the clearinghouse from offering a post-launch IP claim service? Or are we saying it is not part of this mandate?
It is not part of this mandate.
Certainly not precluding people from doing it.
No, I mean, people do it now.
This is something that that the BC, you know, is still pushing on, that this should be mandatory. But, you know, at minimum, we ought to be recommending it as a best practice.
I think it's an excellent topic for our PDP. It's not what we've been asked to discuss.
Hey, Paul?
Yeah, this is Paul. I guess I want to deal with both things. I think the writing in red on the right and what Mike's brought up. First of all, I just want to make sure that we all are saying that it is mandatory for registrars and registries, that it would be for both IP claims and Sunrise, that they would all have to provide the mechanism for the nationally registered rights that we talked about previously, that the only exception would be for highly restricted registries, you know, for example, the .SHU that would only perhaps allow Sunrises in Class 25, but would come from that same data set, and that we're not talking about, you know, registries and registrars being able to jettison the process entirely. That's sort of clarification number one. Because if not, then the whole thing, you know, all this has been a non-starter. And then number two, I agree with Mike that in terms of a post-launch claim service, some registries would like, I'm sure, to have that in place. So it will be a clearinghouse that they could contract with to be able to do that. And, you know, I do think that since the technology is available and could be contracted for, that it makes sense to say, since it is a best practice because it is better to do this, it is better to provide notice than not provide notice if that's possible within your business model. And so I don't see any harm as, you know, in essence, you know, a note to the board saying, you know, we didn't reach consensus that a post-launch IP claim service is mandatory. However, we do believe that this would be a good best practice. It would provide great notice to potential registrants so they could avoid trouble. And we, by noting that we think it would be a best practice, we are, in essence, encouraging people to give it some real thought about whether or not they will implement it.
Hey, all right, Jeff Newman.
Yeah, on that, you can't call something a best practice that's never been done before, right? For all we know, it could be actually a worse practice. it could be something that's awful. You could say the trademark owners would like it. I have nothing wrong with saying that in the report. We can't really call something a best practice if it's never been done before, and I'm not even sure it is a best practice. Remember, when you use the term best practice, that implies that any registry that does anything different is not engaging in best practice, and I'm not sure any registry would enjoy that term to be applied. And again, if you want to say trademark owners and businesses have asked for this, that's great, and you can put that in the report, but not a best practice.
Hey, Zahid?
I think we're developing things as we go along here. And if something is considered by us in consensus to be a practice that we'd like to see there and a better practice in a registrar as compared to some other registry as compared to some other registry, we can say that. So even though something doesn't exist, to say that, well, then you just cannot call it a best practice seems to me to be a bit of a difficult suggestion. As far as post-launch is concerned, at the very least, it should be allowed to registrars who want to do this to be able to do so. And if various people on this call who represent various constituencies and stakeholder groups feel that this would be a best practice, I think we should at least put that in there. If it's not mandatory, at least at the very least, it should be a best practice.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get consensus of this group that a post-launch IP claims process with the chilling effect that would come with it would be a best practice. So, I mean, we could talk about it more. We could put it in there as something that, you know, trademark holders might want, as something that a provider could provide. But we're not going to get consensus of this group that it'd be mandatory or that it'd be a best practice.
Well, that's fine, John. We may not get consensus on a lot of things. Doesn't mean, you know, that we should stop talking about them. I mean, the fact we don't get consensus, what does that mean? So we need to break into groups and create two different opinions and then decide how many people share each opinion or what? I mean, not saying there's not consensus is not the final answer, right? So what's the next step?
Well, I heard a proposal that this report include a consensus position that that such a post-IP claims would be a best practice. And what I'm saying is that I don't think we will have consensus on that kind of language. You know, that doesn't mean you can't have a minority report. Doesn't mean you can't have a report that says there's, you know, a portion of the group would like this. That's fine. I'm just saying, just responding to the idea that someone suggested that we put in as a consensus position of this group that we have a post-launch IP claims as a best practice.
How about a recommended practice?
No. As a recommended mandatory practice? No. If there are providers that provide it today. And no one's seeking to preclude them from providing the service, but it shouldn't be an ICANN mandated practice. I'm sorry, there's still two people in the queue, Wendy and then Alan.
So on the nature of mandatory, I'm willing to agree that it can be mandatory for applicable registries to use some pre-clearing process, either an IP claims or Sunrise. that implements this database. I never thought it was mandatory that they implement both, which is what I thought I heard Paul say.
That certainly wasn't in the IRT report.
Yeah, we're not. This is Paul. We're not suggesting that it's mandatory that they implement both, just that they implement one or the other, and that this database is used, and that the nationally recognized rights are part of that process.
Hey, Alan.
Yeah, I think that was just a summary of what we have said before. I don't think there was ever any intent to do both. With regard to post-launch IP claims, I think the most we can say is we do not want to say anything which precludes the clearinghouse from offering such a service, and it may not be the only one offering such a service. And we may want words in the final documents saying that, you know, in the DAG, for instance, saying that registries should consider whether this is appropriate for them. It's going to be attractive to trademark holders. It's going to have potentially a very large chilling effect. You know, as a regular registrant, I'm not going to register something if someone says you may get sued by a huge corporation on it. So there are chilling effects. The registries need to consider it, and it's a business decision they have to make. I think that's about as much as we can put into this. I personally would love to see it if it was done in a good way, but I don't think we're in a position to mandate it, and it's way out of our scope.
All right, any more comments? Marjorie, you have what you need?
Yeah, I don't know if I should add Alan's last comment about making a notation in the report about considering that. Is that something, that's some consensus?
Jeff, do you have a view?
Which Jeff?
Either.
I'm still trying. This is Jeff Newman. I'm not sure what we...
When you draft it up, if you don't mind, you know, it said registry should consider whether it wants to use the clearinghouse or some or the clearinghouse provider to provide a post-launch claim service.
Registry should, well, I think may consider.
May consider.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, I think they should all consider it. They should reject it or accept it based on their needs.
Okay.
Well, okay, thanks.
All right. Six. We got the notice. We'll all look at it. And if you guys agree on it, I suspect that most of us would. But why don't we take that to the list? And then...
I haven't looked at that yet, but I'm presuming there is some language in it talking about language.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Paul? Nope. Paul's good. Any other comments on that? On number six? All right, number seven. There's consensus on that. Okay. All right, so we have 17 minutes left, and Marty wanted to go through the list of questions. Zahid? Sorry.
Yeah, I think Mike and me have been sort of discussing this sort of offline, and the fact that the identical match is so limited that it only covers the trademark, it doesn't cover anything else, which means the trademark holder is going to have to pay to be in the IP clearinghouse and then pay a watch notice separately for anything which is Yahoo plus anything else. Makes it very difficult for us to go back to our constituency and say, well, this clearinghouse is useful to trademark holders. It just wanted to make that point.
What's the difference between this and the IRT proposal, where the trademark community got together and said this is what we want?
That's it.
I'm not
mischaracterization of the IRT proposal, as you know.
Well, I'm just asking, is there a difference between what you just articulated and what's in the IRT proposal? Let's start with that.
Yeah, there's a
My understanding was different, John. Maybe I'm wrong. I think maybe I misread the footnote that was there. That may be my personal feedback on that. But irrespective, I know that my members going back to them and saying to them, well, you've got to pay to be in the IP clearinghouse. What you get basically is exactly your trademark. That's it, nothing more. They're just going to say, what's the point?
Okay. Could someone else answer that who was on the IRT and on that subgroup, Jeff, or I guess Jeff?
Yeah, I don't see this as being very different than what the IRT recommended. It's just refined a little bit, but, you know, I can't speak, obviously, for the business constituency, but I thought there was consensus on the IRT report. So what the business constituency is asking for now, or is asked for during this call, seems above and beyond what was in the IRT report, which is fine. But a concept of a post-launch IC claim, concept of extending the marks beyond just identical match, those were not recommended in the IRT report.
Yeah, well, in the IRT report, there was also the whole concept that the identical match was based on GPML, and that at the second level, the domain name would be blocked. We're not having that. This is just a claim service. So you have to sort of see the other side of the coin, which is that previously the purpose of identical match was to block because of the GPML. We don't have the GPML anymore.
So the GPML was identical match too, though. GPML was just that.
Yes, it was. Yes, so, it was, but at least
so Yahoo
people
Sports,
did it with block.
Yahoo Sports would not be protected in the GPL. GPL
no,
it would.
No, it would. Okay. Absolutely right. It would not have been. But here's a different thing. Here we're just talking about a notice, and that's all we're left with. So to say, well, just focusing on the definition of identical match without seeing what the remedy is, because the remedy has changed, for us the situation has changed as well. Previously, identical match meant that you got a block. Now it means, oh, you just get a notice. And so if you're going to change that, then you got to be proportional on the other side. That's the way I feel.
All right. So Margie has loaded the questions. We'll take one at a time. And this is the Janus. So the discussion should consider concerns and questions the board raised regarding implementation aspects of a clearinghouse database and its use to support an IP claim service or Sunrise process. So did we consider the concerns and questions the board raised going forward? Let's say, number one, impact of a clearinghouse notice on a registrant. Is there a potential chilling effect on registrations if a trademark holder contacts a registrant before the registration is made? Yeah, Alan?
That question does not apply since nobody along the way has suggested that the trademark holder be notified before a registration is made.
Well, this is all pre-launch, right?
But none of the an IP claims service goes out to the potential registrant saying you may be infringing. It doesn't send an alert to the trademark holder. That doesn't happen until a registration is actually made or accepted.
Alan's correct. The board, I don't know what they were thinking when they drafted this question. they could have only been thinking of a post-launch IP claims, but that was not what the IRT had recommended.
Right. But even then, the staff report made it very clear, the staff proposal, that under no conditions, it explicitly said under no conditions, should a trademark holder be alerted prior to a registration taking effect.
Right.
That you don't want the trademark holder to be able to defensively register something before someone else gets it.
Sure. Kathy?
Reading the question broadly, I would say we've considered this extensively.
Indeed.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. NCSU
may not have addressed is 5 and 6.
Okay, let's go through 2 through 4 real quickly then. Yeah, we talked about 2, the independence from ICANN. That would be a separate entity. Optional and mandatory, we obviously discussed that. Apply to existing registries, doesn't make sense. 5, liability. Okay. During verification of trademarks, liability may arise through false positive and negative results. How should potential liability of parties be managed?
Carefully.
So this is Jeff. The registries, and I just sent around a link during this call to the registry statement on this. Obviously, the registries feel like we should be indemnified by the clearinghouse for all false positive and negative results. The registrars believe that Clearinghouse can manage its liability through its agreements with trademark owners that file with the Clearinghouse. And then we believe that all new registries will disclaim any liability for such false positives and negative results in their registrar agreements and require that such disclaimers be passed through ultimately to resellers, ultimately through resellers if applicable, and to registrants. So,
could you explain that last part, starting with the RRRA?
Yeah, so we're assuming that, in the normal registrar agreement, when the registry implements a Sunrise, it will pass through normal disclaimer and indemnity language to the registrant that it can, but it can't, obviously can't do it for third parties that make claims. So we're just saying through the normal channels, the registry will have a disclaimer, the registrar will have a disclaimer and will probably require that disclaimer be passed through ultimately to the registrant.
Okay, could you explain perhaps in the current process, Asia.tel, I guess you probably have more insight if you're willing, how this liability issue has worked in the current round?
Well, so I can't, I can only speak to the third parties that we've dealt with in Sunrises, but we've obviously, as a registry, have gotten indemnified, or the front end registry, so Alliance for .travel, Telnic for .tel, they have, if they've gone to an independent provider, they have gotten the independent provider to indemnify them for false positives and false negatives. I mean, it's a normal contractual matter. If the entity providing the service screws up, there's usually an indemnity that covers it.
Okay, any comments, thoughts, anything from Amy or Kurt? Does ICANN have a view on this?
I think Kurt's still on. Kurt, are you on? Amy? Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. Forgot I was on mute. Obviously, I think there's got to be some indemnity from the Clearinghouse in terms of for both ICANN and I think registries as well, because if they're the ones who are going to be responsible for holding the data, and then I guess it also depends on how we interact with the authenticators and the database managers. So I think that would be something we'd have to work with the two providers on in terms of how they would accept liability.
Yeah, this is Jeff. Just to add to what Amy said, you need to make it mandatory on the clearinghouse. You couldn't have that as a matter of separate negotiation between the clearinghouse and the registries, because obviously if ICANN mandates one clearinghouse, then or at least one database, then obviously that database has all the bargaining power in a negotiation. It would have to be mandated on the clearinghouse or on the database provider. I think, another possible way is mandating some sort of or coming up with a dispute resolution process to handle false positives or false negatives or whatever it is. In order to handle that. By the way, it's not been an issue with any of the Sunrises that I'm aware of that there have been false positives. If anyone's aware of any situations aside from, where there's been validation, obviously in Info when there was no validation, there were lots of false and fraudulent claims. But since validation's been instituted in Sunrise processes, I'm not aware of any fraudulent or false positives.
Okay, so if ICANN is awarding an agreement to an entity to provide this service, I would think it's fair to ask for indemnification from the service provider for any mistakes that it makes to, indemnify ICANN and whoever else down the line. Is there any concern with that? Okay, so maybe we just add a line, and maybe when we talk about maybe in number two and function of the clearinghouse or...
Yeah, I mean, where we talk about
put it in the. I think we've got some specifics on the contract.
Oh, yeah.
All added
good spot.
There.
Perfect. Okay.
Right, number three, right.
Great. Okay. Any concerns? If not, we'll move on to number six. Who assumes the cost of the clearinghouse? Should the clearinghouse be funded completely by the parties utilizing its services? And in the current marketplace, the cost is borne by the trademark holders, I assume. But the benefit is they'd only have to do it once first.
I thought there's also costs that the a registry is saving from not having to do it itself, so they bear some of the costs. I thought we had discussed that.
Okay.
The registry, it's hard because you have to break things out, right? So is it saving the registry costs? Maybe, maybe not, in the sense of registries generally just pass through the third-party costs.
It goes into their pricing decisions.
Yeah, so ultimately they're probably going to be charging, I would assume that they'd be charging a registrant, or I'm sorry, they would be charging a Sunrise registrant less for a Sunrise registration than they currently charge. So that's how the registry is absorbing the cost. I mean, if you're going to make the registry pay for part of the clearinghouse, then the Sunrise registration will cost more than what was initially anticipated.
But the question is, should the clearinghouse be funded completely by the parties utilizing its services?
That's how a registry in general is funded, right?
Yeah, how could it not be that?
It's funded completely by people that use their registry. That's the notion of having a registry.
Right. Hey, I've got Mark Partridge on the
line. I was just going to say, when we submitted, the IPC submitted responses to these points, and our submission was that the clearinghouse should be funded by the parties using the system.
Who's using the system?
Brand owners, registries, and applicants.
Yeah, the registry submitted a statement saying, look, if you're requiring the registries to adopt this and they have to use this very one, passing the cost on to the registries is kind of it's something obviously the registries oppose. But in the end, I mean, recognize that the registries are paying for it. They're going to charge more to Sunrise Registrants, and in the end, it's going to be the trademark owner that pays for it anyway.
But it's the parties utilizing the services, obviously, would pay for it.
You know, that argument only goes so far. The whole point of the clearinghouse is that it benefits the entire community, right? So to some extent, the cost needs to be spread out amongst the registrars who collect that money from the community.
But you don't understand, like, the concept, it would be spread out in the sense that registries would be charging less for a Sunrise registration than what they charge today. So if today registries charge a $250 sun fee for a Sunrise registration because they're passing through the validation cost, registries in the future will not be charging $250 for a Sunrise registration. They'd be charging much, much, much less, if not the price of a regular registration. If you're going to say now that the registries have to fund the clearinghouse, then the price of a Sunrise registration is just going to go up to something close to what it is today, and in the end, you're not saving anyone any money.
I was assuming we're talking about we're talking about the registries funding part of the cost, but there would still be a substantial fee charged to trademark holders.
That was my understanding as well.
Well, the registry is paid for it, they're just going to pass on the cost anyway. So, you know, the question as posed is, are the parties utilizing the service? Is the clearinghouse being funded completely by the parties utilizing its services? Of course. I mean, how could it be anything other than that unless we get kind of infusion from ICANN or someone, some other third party? But ICANN's getting it from the registries anyway through the application fees. So it's just a circular question.
I agree with that.
Hey, I've got Mark, you already won, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'll take my hand down.
Jeff Eckhouse and then Alan.
Yeah, I just.
John, thank you for stating that. I agree with you. It's to the point is it's who shares it. What you do with that cost is a business decision that the registry or registrar will make. So we're not allocating right now saying this person's going to pay this and then they can't pass along those costs or can't do it. So I think we just move on from this question. It actually doesn't make sense because if I'm a registry and I get this cost, if I'm a registrar and I have this cost and then I just pass it through, there's nobody that's going to regulate what I do and how I offset my costs and how I do that. So I'm not sure if we even worth discussing this question any further.
Other than the competitive marketplace. Okay. Alan.
Yeah, I just wanted to note that for an IP claim service, it's not clear that someone who registers a trademark with the clearinghouse will ever register a domain name. They may just be trying to protect their names. So in that case, definitely the trademark owner gets something should the registry be paying something for using the service. That's not 100% clear in my mind. If we're talking about mainly using it for Sunrise, then the statement that both Jeffs made, I think, is valid, that, you know, it doesn't matter where you route the money, it all comes from the same place. So it really becomes almost a business decision of how do you equitably do this. I don't think it's something we need to consider seriously.
Okay, any other final points? We're at the end of our time. Okay. All right, so there are doodles for next week for two calls for each topic, it sounds like. It sounds like, you know, we're getting pretty close on some of these things. We didn't have time to talk about the URS outstanding issue, but it looks like there's already some list conversations, and we'll just save that for early next week.
And as noted at the beginning of the call, the doodle says they're one-hour calls. Treat them as if they're one and a half.
Okay. Thank you, and let's hope David's back next week. So,
thank you.
Well done, Jonathan.
Right, thank you.
Thanks, John.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.